1320 WILS. Well, we all live with it one way or the other. Some of us are burdened with it. Others somehow are able to persevere past it. But fear is just part of life. My next guest says, you can't avoid it, so why not master it? Robert Maurer is the author of the brand new book, Mastering Fear, Harness Emotion to Achieve Excellence in Health, Work, and Relationships. Robert, great to have you here.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, and you're a clinical psychologist, right?
That's right. I work in the medical school at UCLA and the University of Washington as well.
And so do you have like a private practice also? Or
I have a small private practice, but my primary work is working in medical clinics, training physicians who are in 3 years of training to become family doctors. So I see a lot of patients who are coming in to see their physician for stress, anxiety, depression. And what we found is that if they have trouble acknowledging their fears in life and call it something else.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Because I'm trying to imagine, I thought even today, I mean, have I been afraid today? And I'm not sure if I have. How do you know if you're afraid?
You know, that's a great question. I'll ask an audience, how many of you are afraid to cross the street? And in a room of 100, Michael, I may get one or two. But if I say, if I take you to the nearest corner, intersection, blindfold you, would you now admit to being afraid of crossing a street? And of course, everybody's hands go hose up.
Uh-huh.
But if I say, suppose you and I are getting close to the intersection, I'm keeping eye contact because I'm making a point. Do you, out of sheer politeness to me, keep eye contact as we cross the street, oblivious to traffic? And of course, everyone sees that, of course, we're afraid to cross the street. How we deal with that fear is we look both ways, wait for the walk signal, and make sure the cars
right.
are stopping.
Wait, so, how fearful do you think we all really are then?
Well, because most of the time we respond to our fears with creative, constructive actions. You may have chosen food today for lunch, not based on what food preference, but the fear if you don't take care of your body,
mm-hmm.
it won't sustain you through your show or through your aging process.
Fear.
So
fear
motivates us all day long. Without it, you wouldn't stop at a red light.
But why fear? Well, I mean, anger, sadness, all these other emotions. Why is it the fear, do you believe, is the core of it?
Well, because the part of the brain where fear lives is called the amygdala, Michael, and we share this with every single mammal. And so mammals are essentially have two jobs, and that's regulating the body and survival in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the one emotion crucial for survival is fear. In the presence of fear, the brain won't let you feel anything else. So fear is intended as a survival gift, as a way of keeping us alive.
Okay.
And what makes it useful is that, again, all the symptoms of fear in animals are the same things we call stress, heart racing, dry mouth, neck pain, back pain,
mm-hmm.
insomnia, stomach pain, all these things that happen to us when we call it stress. In animals, we call it fear.
Okay, so someone that doesn't have all that, does that mean they're not fearful?
I've never met anybody that didn't have those things.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is if you're not aware of it, you turn it into fatigue or headaches or, as you say, anger
mm-hmm.
or depression. So if you don't have a healthy relationship to fear, it manifests itself physically or emotionally in some other form, which is usually more toxic.
I'm talking to Robert Maurer, the brand new book, Mastering Fear, just out this month, brand new. So how do you begin to master fear?
Well, the answer to that comes again when we start to look at animals, because every mammal on the planet, Michael, has a built-in response to fear. So when a deer is frightened, it runs away. When a bird's frightened, it flies away. When a mouse is frightened, it burrows. And I've asked audiences all over the world, from Kansas to Kazakhstan, if every other mammal has a healthy response to fear that shuts off the fear, what are we supposed to do? And nobody's ever given me the answer. We couldn't figure it out until we looked both at chimpanzees and at children. What do children do when they wake up in the middle of the night with a nightmare? Of course, they run to their parents' bed.
Okay.
The doctor doesn't treat them to do that. And we have over 100 studies that the healthy response to fear is to reach to another person for support.
Okay. So is it that simple then? I mean, that's anytime we feel that bad feeling, we just simply need to have somebody to run to?
Well, that's half of it. Your question is very wise because it isn't that simple, although for many people growing up in families where going to your parents for help didn't turn out to be a very good idea, it throws the rest of your life off balance. But the second part of it is we believe the brain builds in its own internal parent so that when you get scared or upset, it's a kind of an adult word for it, there's a voice in our head that responds that's either comforting and supportive or harsh and critical. And if you have that harsh voice in your head that's activated by the amygdala, then it escalates the fear, escalates
Well,
the
what
pain.
Do you mean? The harsh voice could be like, don't be afraid or don't be a wimp, that kind of voice. Is that a bad voice?
Exactly. Or if I can give you a little more specific example, I'll say to an audience, how many of you think rejection's painful? Everybody raises their hand. I say, that's not possible. Let me see if I can prove it to you. Now, rejection comes in many forms, but romantic rejection is one form.
Right.
And I'll go up to someone in the audience and say, see if you would agree to the rest of the audience that this is one form of rejection. I go up to a woman and say, would you like to go out with me Saturday night? And if that woman was to say to me, gee, I'd like to, Bob, but I'm busy flossing, which usually gets a laugh, and I walk away, is that rejection? Does that hurt? And everybody agrees. I say, well, let's see if that's exactly what happened. Yeah. I went up to this woman. She gave me a lame excuse. As I walked away, did the following conversation occur automatically in the center of my head? Boy, Bob, am I proud of you. Nice try. That was gutsy. Could have been a little smoother. Next time you'll do better, but I'm so proud of you for trying.
Okay.
Is that the voice that showed up, or does the voice say, boy, you sound like such a jerk. Who wants to go out with you? You're old, you're ugly, you're fat. Nobody likes you anyway. And, of course, people agree more likely that second voice is the one that shows up.
Okay. So, well, even if you try – no, this, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Being positive is a better way to kind of deal with that. But, there is kind of a bite or there's an initial kind of pain, is there not, to experiences like that?
Well, ideally, if you had that nurturing voice in your head, the alarm system would shut off and you would hear that nurturing voice. Now, as your question implies, most of us don't have that voice. But make it even worse, most of us aren't even aware that voice is there. It's been there all of our life.
We just block it out. Hey, tell me this. Robert Maurer, by the way, the book is Mastering Fear. How do you know if you're, in a sense, you've set your life up to avoid pain and fearful situations that you're stifled versus you've overcome it. You just don't, it's not hindering you. If you've rationalized your life in a way where you're living it without fear, but it's because you're hiding from it, how do you know the difference, really?
That's great. Yeah, I once saw a postcard in the San Francisco airport, and it said, if you're very, very careful, nothing good or bad will ever happen to you. So if you're seeking an intimate relationship with another person, if you're going after the work that you care about, if you're trying to develop meaningful relationships, trying to take care of your health, fear has to show up. Again, the bigger the street you want to cross metaphorically, the more fear shows
That's
up.
That's just part of the experience, you're saying.
Exactly. So if you're avoiding the things in life that you truly want and drowning out those wants with food or alcohol or cigarettes or some other distraction, then you know you're off course.
Interesting. So when you meet people that have been, let's say, single or never been in really a long, deep relationship, and they say, look, it's just not something I'm interested in, what is that? Is that automatically mean they're just afraid, or what does that mean, really?
Well, not necessarily automatically, because as we know, people can lead very fulfilled, meaningful lives. It's not that they have to have a relationship, but if they're avoiding one out of fear, then they can get themselves in trouble.
And how would they really know, though? I mean, they may just rationalize it out in their head, right?
They rationalize it, or more likely, you're going to see that they're overeating or drinking too much or doing something else to drown out that hunger. If they're taking care of themselves and have deep friendships and the rest of their life is satisfying, I would suspect they're doing just fine. But the question is, are they creating intimacy in their friends and just deciding romance is not for them?
Does it take counseling to really break out of a lifelong pattern of being afraid in some way?
It really doesn't. And that's why we wrote the book, that these exercises that the brain needs in order to build in that nurturing voice are actually quite simple.
Give me one exercise.
The first one is assuming any time you're upset, any time your body's in tension, is to assume there's a fear underneath. Now, is that always true? Probably not, but it's very useful. The next thing to do is whenever you're afraid, to practice a voice at least two or three times a day, whether you're afraid or not, actually, the nurturing voice you would say to somebody else, your child, your best friend, if they were afraid in that same circumstance. Okay. So, for example, you could practice three or four times a day, preferably out loud, because you're trying to build this into the amygdala, the old part of the brain. It's okay to be scared. It's okay to mistakes. It's okay to ask for help. You're pursuing what you want in life, and it's not a simple
right.
course.
And,
so
and saying it out loud is key, you're saying. You have to hear the words?
Exactly, because again, you're trying to build it into the midbrain where the amygdala lives, mm-hmm. and it's going to take practice. The same way, for example, if I draw two golden arches, whether you want to or not, and whether you've ever set foot in McDonald's, you can tell me some of their products. They've shown you those commercials, 15-second commercials, over and over and over again. The brain has built it in.
Right.
So it's the repetition.
It's automatic.
Wait,
is it better to be angry rather than afraid when you're under some duress?
No, much, much better to be afraid, because we have extremely good research on anger. Anger is very, very hard on the heart. There's been tests of people in their when they started medical school or law school who scored in the top quartile in a test on anger.
Uh-huh.
40 years later, they looked at these same people. Those who scored in the top quartile, the top 25%,
right.
were seven times more likely to already be dead from heart disease.
So if you're conditioned to go to anger, how do you change that to fall back to a feeling of fear instead?
It's a very common challenge. The first, again, is to try to assume that, because there's only two basic human fears, Michael. One is the fear of not being worthwhile.
Uh-huh.
The reason this person, the waiter's not waiting on me is because they don't think I'm important, or the reason my friend's not calling me back is they just don't care for me.
Uh-huh.
And the other fear is of losing control, which we tend to equate with health and finance.
Well, what about fear of being embarrassed? Is that control?
Usually control, yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Or you're afraid that someone's going to say no to you, and that, again, that no means you're not worthwhile.
So
person.
Basically being abandoned, essentially, that's being
exactly.
worthwhile, and then control
yep.
is the other one. And
that's
so,
right.
And so go ahead. So if those are the two fears, go ahead.
So there's a couple ways to work on anger. There's actually a very mechanical one that works very quickly if people will do it, and that's the moment they start to get angry, because they're virtually almost at that point out of control. This will sound crazy to you, but you put your tongue out of your mouth, and then you can say whatever you want to the person. So if I put my tongue out of my mouth and say, "You are such a terrible person,"
uh-huh.
it sounds silly, and the other person laughs, and it breaks the pattern. But once you assume that there's a fear underneath, then if you can build in that nurturing voice, then it keeps you from getting angry in the first place.
It just seems like that's one of the hardest things. But once you're acclimated
yes.
to anger, to stop that seems incredibly hard, because it just comes on. It comes upon you, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's another technique that works with anger.
Yeah.
Because again,
we've got 30 seconds. Go ahead, though.
Okay. You close your eyes, picture yourself in the situation that's provoked you, and imagine, see the person in front of you, and just picturing what you would do, what you would say if you were going to do this in a healthier way,
huh.
and repeat that.
Imagine doing it the right way.
Exactly. And you repeat that three or four times a day in your imagination. The brain eventually changes the pattern.
Robert Maurer, the brand new book, Mastering Fear, Harness Emotion to Achieve Excellence in Health, Work, and Relationships. Robert, it's been enlightening. Thank you.
My pleasure, Michael.